We're celebrating the start of spring Basque style right now on Travel with Rick Steves with an intimate look at what the Basque country of Spain and France offers as a distinctive cultural region. Our guides are proud of their Basque lineage, and they come to us from the Basque country in Spain. Agustin Cerisa lives in the coastal city of San Sebastian, and Francisco Glaria comes to us from Pamplona. Agustin, we've talked about all of these sites in France and in Spain, and we have not talked about Guernica. What's the importance of Guernica historically for the Basque people?
Well, it got really promoted with the Picasso painting.
So the horrible bombing by Hitler and Franco
in the Civil War. Yeah, he was representing the bombing during the Civil War, 1937. The German-Italian airplanes bombed the city of Guernica.
Picasso made Guernica famous with the
mural. Really bad bombing, right? It was on a Monday. Monday is a big day for the market.
So they planned to bomb when everybody was there in the market.
That's right. That happened during the midday.
Picasso was really inspired to be involved because of the humanity of that, I think.
Yes, at that time, Picasso was getting ready for the expo in Paris. He got the information, and in 3 months, he painted the Guernica.
Now, also we have to remember, Guernica was not just any town. It's a very important town to the Basque people, even before World War II. Yeah. What is the importance to the Basque people of Guernica?
The old oak tree. The old oak tree is the symbol of the Basque people.
Right.
Since the 11th century, the governors of the area have been gathering around the oak tree.
This goes way back to the mythic foundations of the Basque people, when they would gather together and their leaders from different clans would come together under the oak tree in Guernica.
Yeah.
That must be like a pilgrimage if you're a Basque.
It's a must. If you want to go deeper into the history of the Basque community and the Basque people, I think it's a must to visit Guernica.
And it's quite easy to visit these cities close together. They're all within an hour of each other.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about Basque country, and we're joined by two friends who are guides in Basque country, Agustin Cerisa and Francisco Glaria. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And Lynn's on the line in Olympia, Washington. Hi, Lynn. Thanks for your call.
Oh, you're welcome. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Hey, my family and I are going to be touring the Basque country of Spain and France, and you've mentioned some generalities about places and sites that we should see. But can you give me specifics about, say, San Sebastian or some of those other areas? What, museums and sites should we not miss?
Okay, well, that's a good question. We should ask Agustin, because you live in San Sebastian, what one site must we see in San Sebastian?
Well, you have two mountains. Up top of those mountains, you have a lookout over the city. You can take the funicular to the top of the mountain and enjoy the views. Or if you want to, stretch your legs and take a stroll up to the other mountain, you can go through the castle into the museum of the city. If you have a nice day, if you have the chance to get to there on a nice day, you will enjoy very much the views of the city and the little mountains surrounding the city.
You know, Agustin, for me, San Sebastian, more than any other place, is a place where you eat your sightseeing in the tapas bars. And if you were going to take me to one tapas bar and feed me one special dish, where would it be and what would it be?
Well, there are plenty of them. The old town is full of tapas bars, and you can find pinchos. We call them pinchos in the Basque country.
So the word for tapas in Basque is pincho.
Yeah.
But what's one dish you would have? What was your favorite? Because there's many.
Yeah, the foie gras grilled.
Foie gras.
Yeah.
And what bar would you have it in?
Well, there are plenty of them. You've got Gandarias. I mean, that's very popular. And you have the Cuchara de San Telmo, which is very famous.
San Telmo.
Yeah.
Does that help you, Lynn?
Yes, absolutely. The next question was, how do I eat my way through the Basque country, which I understand is some of the best cuisine in Europe.
Oh, it's incredible. And in San Sebastian, it's just like drop in with an appetite and there's plenty of friendly people to help you out. Good luck. Thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
James is on the line in Palm Desert, California. James, thanks for your call.
Thank you very much, Rick. My wife and I are planning a trip to Paris and Provence. And what I was looking to do is possibly add a 2 to 3 day side trip over to the Basque area from Provence. Now, one was best way to get there, and two, a short visit, where best to go.
So first of all, Agustin, if you were in Marseille or Avignon in southern France, how would you get to San Sebastian? Would you fly or take the train?
You can take the train, but it would be better to fly. If you can fly to Biarritz Airport, that would be the best choice.
Remember, in Europe, there's a lot of discount airlines, and there's, in so many cases, you can fly cheaper than you can take the train.
Yeah.
You'd probably try to find a flight to Biarritz, and then you're within an hour of all these places we're talking about. Are you, James, are you thinking mostly of French or Spanish best country, or a representative sampling of both?
It's more really a representative sampling.
Right. I would say Bayonne to start. That's the big historic capital of the French part of Basque Country. And then if you have a night in a charming little town in France, it would be Saint-Jean-de-Luz for me.
Yeah.
And then you got to go down to San Sebastian. Use that as a headquarters. And if you have the energy, see the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao and make the historic pilgrimage to Guernica.
Yep. Yeah, that would be a good option.
Boy, that sounds good. Just saying that makes me want
to
go there.
A lot to do in 3 days.
Yeah, you need to cut your southern France time a little shorter and spend more time in Basque Country.
Well, distances are short. I mean, there's not a long distance drive from one place to the other.
That's right.
Sure.
Good luck, James.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you for coming.
Take care.
We're learning about Basque Country in Spain and France right now on Travel with Rick Steves with two local guides from the region, Agustin and Francisco. 877-333-7425. That's our number. Or share your impressions of Basque Country on our radio message board at ricksteves.com. And Kent's on the line in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Kent, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. Last March, we were in Spain, and we actually made an effort to specifically see Basque Country and use Pamplona as a base. And our trip one day was going to be from Biarritz to San Sebastian, and the proprietor of our hotel recommended that we visit Hondarribia, which is right between the two towns, and that was his hometown. And so we stopped in Hondarribia, and it was just a beautiful little cobblestone street-lined town.
Hmm.
And while we were walking through the streets, we heard a loud noise and noticed a small parade coming through town, and it was a group of men and women in what appeared to be dunce caps. They were bright green and bright red. They had sheepskin skirts around the middle of their bodies and large bells attached to their backs.
Sounds funny to me. Do they force these people to do that?
And in the middle of the group was a gentleman dressed very much as a shepherd. I was listening a moment ago about the family of shepherd there. And
This is a question for Francisco, the shepherd man.
The shepherd man. Those are the Haialdunaks. These guys, what they do, to start with, the Basque Country, we have a lot of mythology and everything is related with nature. And these Haialdunaks, these guys with the big bells making a lot of noise, it's very, very, very stressing. My kids, they fear them. What they do is they wake up nature. They're telling nature, wake up, girl, it's time to start working. So that is their job. They have to wake up nature. So that is what it means.
And what time of year?
At the end of fall.
At the end of fall? You mean at the end of winter or?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
at the end of winter.
So this is springtime.
Yeah, it's the springtime. It's called in the spring.
Everything is waking up. The greenery is going to come.
In fact, normally in the world, we celebrate the new year, January the 1st. But what is to celebrate there? There's nothing. You go from winter to winter. So it's like nothing to be celebrated. In the Basque Country, we celebrate winter at the end of the winter.
So when would that be?
Life, March, April.
Like Easter time.
Yeah, Easter time.
Yeah.
It's a moment to celebrate something.
And what is the name of these guys again?
Haialdunaks.
The Haialdunaks. Whoa. There you go, Kent.
Well, yeah, thank you. It was very interesting and very loud, no doubt.
It was loud.
Grab your children and hold them tight. The guys who are waking up Mother Nature are coming down the street. Thanks, Kent,
Absolutely.
For your call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
So we have that one opportunity to see these crazy guys waking up nature. Let's just finish our little discussion here with one image that really helps you connect with Basque Country. Francisco, what would it be for you?
For me, it would be anything related with nature. Nature, it's our passion, and you can go anywhere. And
on the sea?
Yeah.
In fact, Basque people are famous mariners in the old times, Columbus age. A lot of famous Basque sailors end up in the mountains with all those shepherds that ended up in Idaho and California. And Augustine, how would you think we can really understand Basque culture?
We can understand the Basque culture with the fishing.
Fishing.
You mentioned that I'm coming from a fishing family. We've been famous for making good boats. There were Basque sailors joining the Columbus expedition to to America. It is known the Basque people had already arrived to the north of America before them. And they were famous for whale hunting.
Whale hunting too?
Yeah, there's a record of Basque people selling in the market in south of France in the 7th century whale products.
A tough people.
Yeah.
And even if you're not going to get out on a boat with some Basque people, you can go to your town, San Sebastian, and eat the
catch. That's for sure.
To finish things off, how would you say thank you and bon voyage, happy travels?
Yeah, you would say eskerrik asko ondo joan.
I would say merci, bon voyage. Thank you very much, and thanks. Happy travels.
Thank you very much.
Sail north across the Atlantic from Basque Country, and your next stop might be in Ireland. In fact, County Cork. Keep going up the west coast of Ireland, and you might find yourself on the same ferry that Travel with Rick Steves producer Sarah McCormick took on a recent visit to the weather-worn Aran Islands.
This is our main village, Coronan. This is our capital, like New York, where we have our one and only supermarket, one post office, one bank. That's about it. And the island is 9 miles by 3 miles, and the population is 2,000 people in summertime, and right down to 800.
I'm on a tour bus on the island of Inishmore, the largest of the Aran Islands. These are three rocky islands off Ireland's rough west coast. It's just an hour-long ferry ride to the bustling city of Galway, but it's a world away.
Financial district. Blink and you miss it. Bank of Ireland. Only open one day a week in winter time. Depends on the weather and open.
My guide for the day is Diana, a young mother who grew up here. She's a short, compact woman with long dark hair, a no-nonsense demeanor, and she's funny.
We have three pubs and we have three churches. A lot of spirits going on.
Outside the tiny town, we drive through a rough and beautifully desolate landscape. Treeless green fields dotted with sheep, and crisscrossed with crumbly stone walls. In every direction, ocean waves crash on the rocky shoreline. In the Middle Ages, this was home to some of Ireland's most famous saints, who lived here in isolated monastic communities. When Oliver Cromwell conquered Ireland in the 17th century, some very tough Catholics fled to this harsh place and managed to scrape out a life. The men fished in the Atlantic in small wooden boats called curraghs. There was no farmland, so they manufactured their own soil by mixing seaweed and limestone sand. And they lived in almost complete isolation from the mainland. Up to the late 20th century, many older people here couldn't speak a word of English. Irish Gaelic is still the official language of government and education.
Okay.
Electricity and plumbing didn't arrive here until the 1970s.
Get your cameras out. We're briefly stopping here at some traditional thatch cottages.
We drive past the foundations of a building. The crumbled remains of the walls show the layout of a home.
So if you can visualize, we'll see the thatch. This is your living area, the huge fireplace.
A few decades ago, tourism started bringing some money to the island. Since then, the islanders have abandoned these quaint cottages, with their whitewashed stone walls, thatched roofs, and adorable red doors. Diana said it was impossible to keep the damp out of them.
These are all the same plan, all these cottages. Basically, two rooms. One for the living area and also one for sleeping. There could be 10, there could be 17 in your family. You still went in the same room. Huge fireplace and a hole in the ground as a toilet, outhouse.
And you grew up in a house like that?
I did.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
There was five, including my mom, my dad, and my grandfather. Didn't know any difference that I wasn't brought up in a mansion because everybody else around me was also in a thatched cottage.
Diana seems awfully young for her childhood to be a tourist attraction. Like most of the island's residents, she now lives in a more modern and comfortable concrete home. Until the tourists came, every man on the island had the same job, catching fish.
There isn't a family that hasn't been affected some way or another by drowning. But thank goodness the younger generation are focusing towards education now, because before, the boys would leave at 15 and would go fishing, and majority of them wouldn't even reach 18.
In the 1930s, American filmmaker Robert Flaherty visited here and was intrigued by the dramatic landscapes and the harsh life of the people. He made a documentary about life on the island, which brought Inishmore to the world's attention. Islanders perform their own lives for the camera. They show the movie daily in town for tourists. A mother and her young son stand atop a high cliff, looking intently out to sea, the ocean pummeling the rocks below. Out in the surf, tossed like a miniature toy boat, three men pull on oars that look like toothpicks. The woman screams to her husband, helplessly beckoning him in to shore and safety. Apparently, the movie was staged, but those ocean waves are very real.
Was your father and grandfather fishermen?
Yeah. And my great-grandfather died drowned. He was drowned.
Coming in there, the bay?
Yeah.
Diana drops us off at the island's biggest attraction, Dun Angus. One of Ireland's oldest archaeological sites, it's an Iron Age fort with concentric walls 13 feet thick and 10 feet high. It's a 30-minute climb up a rocky path to the fort, which is perched at the top of a sheer cliff overlooking the ocean. You can barely hear the waves crashing on the rocks 300 feet below, and there's no fence to keep you safe. Tourists like me crawl out to the edge on hands and knees to lie on our stomachs and peer down at the expanse of ocean below. It's an edge of the world kind of place. At the visitor center below the fort, there's a woolen shop selling the traditional sweaters the island is famous for.
Too big.
A woman who might be in her 60s or 70s is trying to help a German woman find the right hat.
No, you don't wear it like that.
She tells me that all the sweaters are handmade by island women, who all know how to knit. I make the mistake of asking if any of the island men knit.
Oh, God forbid. If any of my older generation seen a man with a pair of knitting needles in their hands, they would have a heart attack.
The real man wouldn't have a pair of knitting needles in his hands. Come on.
He'd have a spade or a shovel or a fishing rod, but definitely not a pair of knitting needles.
Back on the bus, Diana seems more open to the changes here.
We have a mix of every nationality now on the island, which is great because you don't have to marry your second cousin anymore. But people did, you know, they had no choice.
We end our tour in a pub for some delicious salmon chowder and a pint of stout. An elderly man at the bar tries, without much luck, to teach me how to complain about the bad weather in Irish Gaelic.
Say that, the weather's bad.
Oh, that's, I think it's
I'm
gonna need more lessons.
Say it, say it.
I ask him if he is a fisherman.
Yeah, I am. I was a fisherman, but I'm not fishing anymore. Get old.
From the island of Inishmore, 10 miles off the coast of Ireland's County Galway, this is Sarah McCormick for Travel with Rick Steves.
We'll share a toast to the singing culture of the Irish from north to south. That's up next on Travel with Rick Steves.